Log Talk Radio.
There's a bird who sings a song of a lost kingdom. The bugs, the trees, that echo has drained. There's a knock at my door, and it's freedom. And all I've got to do is let her in. Oh, howling, howling outside my worry window.
Yes, blessed souls, there's a howling outside our walls. It's the howling for universal redemption. Blessings and greetings and blessings. You're now tuned to blogtalkradio.com, and we humbly suggest with a higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio, we call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 598, in discussion with distinguished B'nai Noah, Part 4. Blessed is our Creator. Shalom, peace, and blessing. Bracha, blessing upon the human family experience with the Creator's helper. Our next program is taking place right now, April 17, 2016, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unifying Soul Actualization. It's now 10:02 Eastern Standard Time. Program content will focus on dialoguing with distinguished B'nai Noah, Children Noah, concerning health and wellness. This series is in connection to my being inspired by a new Facebook closed group, 7 plus 3 Chassidus Chabad for Yeshivas B'nai Avraham, which hopefully will soon be an open form to 7 billion plus human souls, all blessed with the divine image. Our call-in number is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. The tags for today's program are, in fact, Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Children of Israel collaborating with Children of Noah to eliminate hatred, jealousy, and competition not needed, 613 plus 7 commandments equals 620, the crown of the Torah. That's the Hebrew word for keser, crown. And you've been listening to Levi Rabin, No Worries, from his CD called No Worries. And I'm very happy today that it's less than a week now away from our Festival of Freedom, the birth of our nation as Israelite, Jewish, Hebrew people. However, we're not living in a bubble, blessed souls. We were commanded at Mount Sinai to enjoin the rest of the world, the B'nai Noach, that is all the nations of the world, to continue on with their traditions which preceded our traditions, namely the seven Noahide commandments. However, within that, there has to be a certain flexibility to realize it's not just those seven core commandments, it also encompasses all aspects of life. And today's program is spinning off that inspiration. These are basically the idea of talking about wellness, quality of health, wellness, is something that was devised by the United Nations last year as a platform for 17 goals to pursue to promote universally. How much has been accomplished? That's another discussion for another time. Much more has to be accomplished. Joining me today are my three distinguished B'nai Noah, each one a scholar in his own right, Dennis Ryan, a disseminator and teacher, an advocate for the teaching of Rambam, Rabbi Moshe Maimonides, the Nesher Gadol, Rambam. Good morning, Dennis.
Baruch Hashem, peace to all.
Next, we have author of Secular by Design, Alan W. Souza joining us from Florida. Well, I'm sure it's a little sunnier than here, although we've got some beautiful weather here in downtown Boiler Room, Brooklyn. Alan Cecil, good morning, sir.
How do you do, Don? And
how do you do? Well, how do you do? Well, it's not howdy doody, Tom. I'm doing okay. And last but not least, and maybe we'll be joined by someone else also after introducing our bright star on the block, our new arrival to the shores of Brooklyn. Yes, there are shores of Brooklyn on the Hudson Bay and also leading out to Coney Island, whether you want to call that the Atlantic Ocean or Atlantic Bay. Brad Arner. Brad, good morning, sir.
Morning, Don. How's it going? Actually, speaking of the shores, we just visited them yesterday in Brooklyn. There are indeed shores in Brooklyn.
That's right. Which shore did you visit?
We went down to Brighton Beach yesterday.
Well, it was a bright day to be on Brighton Beach, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it was a beautiful day. Beautiful day.
Okay. Gentlemen, and bless yourselves listening out there, I want to dedicate today's program towards the Refuah Shlema, complete healing of my father, Reb Shlomo Yaakov Ben Esther, Esther being his mother, my grandmother, may she rest in peace, that he is still suffering. He's in a nursing home in Ridgewood, New Jersey. And hopefully our efforts talking about health and wellness will be a means of bringing upon him more health and wellness. I'd like to start off as well talking about the usage of our time as it connects to the idea of being healthy and well. And I'm going to be plucking out of a brief letter by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, then we'll turn to Dennis and then Alan and Brad to respond, and then we'll get into the meat of our discussion today. And here it goes. That when we consider the idea of time, time is a relative thing. And the true measure of time, whether it's short or long, is in terms of content and achievement. It is a matter of common experience that it's possible in a short while to have so much good content that would normally fill days, weeks, or even months. And from the particular to the general, what is true of the individual in terms of personal achievement is wider in a general sense in application to the community. I have in mind such activity that stimulates a chain reaction, an activity that sets an example for others to emulate. In such a case, the person setting off this chain reaction has a share and a merit in all good efforts of which he or she has been the cause. A person like yourself who has an influential and active role in the community is as very privileged and in a blessed position, particularly when such activity includes first and foremost is in the area of education. Here the chain reaction is even more in evidence since the present pupils who are now recipients will eventually be benefactors with pupils on their own and so forth. Dennis? How can we convey to our listening audience time over the essence and a little bit of quality time can extend out to days, weeks, and months in terms of furthering the awareness of the issues of healthy, living a healthy and wellness-filled life?
Time is one element that we humans do not control. We use, we observe, and we live by it. And we will be judged by the deeds we have performed for the time that we're on the earth. We must use the time expediently and with common sense. We cannot ignore things because time is going by. The clock does not stop on our lives. We cannot hesitate. If you hesitate, not everything is lost. But you must remember those important things to our lives here that must be addressed. If you ignore them, you are basically saying, time doesn't matter here. Well, time is not yours. Time is a precious commodity. And what you do with it, you will be measured again. So what we must remember that we have to use common sense and address those things that are necessary to us. Our health, our welfare, and our being is necessary to be alive and vibrant for the time we're here. So God bless us and use the time correctly.
Brad, thank you, Dennis. Brad, time as it pertains to spreading ideas, and in particular today's program, about staying healthy and maintaining wellness. how important is that we convey this message with Torah or seven Noahid commandment values in order that people can fill their time with more quality moments of accessing consciousness that, you know, we have to be motivated with every aspect of our life. Some things happen automatically, like our respiration process or our thought process, but also we have to sometimes control our breathing. Sometimes we have to control our thoughts, else we can wind up emotionally dysfunctional. We can wind up, God forbid, having a heart issue. Your thoughts on these matters, the usage of time, relating it to projecting out teachings of healthy living lifestyles and wellness.
I think it's time is a fascinating question. When you ask the question, the first thing that came to my mind is Pirkei Avos, chapter 4, 17, Halakha 17, where Mishnah 17, I guess, technically, where it says, you know, a single moment of repentance and good deeds in this world is greater than all the world to come, mm-hmm. right? And which is a fascinating thing to say. Not exactly what I think the average person, if you just asked, you know, the average secular person walking around the street without, I don't mean secular in any particular definition other than without somebody who, you know, leads their life, hasn't necessarily invested a lot of time into Torah or into researching certain questions. You know, I think we draw largely from our culture, and our culture generally tells us is one largely based on the Greek idea of there being a very distinct separation and filth compared to the body as compared to, you know, the soul, which is seen as pure in Greek ideology. Ancient Greek ideology. And hence, you know, that comes down all the way to our present time of this, as was brought out by the Christian church, the Catholic church especially, the physical world is not seen as being of any utility. It's nearly suffering in and of itself. And hence, time is really, in that worldview, is really just a delay until you can get to the world to come, right? And where I think in the Torah ideology, you know, it's a completely different mindset, right? The physical, mm-hmm. and that includes time, the physical is a vital component in the entire sort of running of the universe. And once again, the sages say, you know, a single moment in this world is better than the world to come, mm-hmm. because you can fill it with tshuva and with mitzvot and with good deeds. In other words, it's, you know, you can't, there's no distinct separation. I think that's one of the, you know, and it connects to the larger topic today of health and well-being, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, those are sort of my initial thoughts. I think it's important to show a distinction between sort of the commonly held ideas and the way the Torah views things. And it's a symbiotic relationship, I think, in the Torah. And I think that has a huge impact on the way that you think about many, many elements of this physical world, mm-hmm. including health.
Thank you. Thank you, Brad. Before I turn to Alan for his response, I just want to welcome in. He called in while you were speaking, Brad, our Ben Noah activist and active student, Rabbi Yaakov Rogalski, who is the co-author of Path to Righteous Gentile, Ron Williams. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Don. I really thought I shook the bronchitis, but this morning it's like I'm almost wiped completely. Yeah.
Oy vey. So don't strain yourself. It's fine. Yes, go ahead.
No, I call it so I can be part of it. I want to hear everybody's viewpoints. It's very interesting, and you know, I'll be here in the background and with you guys.
Okay. Alan, you are certainly well versed in the the influence of Greek ideology. And also, last week you shared with me that you have a certain allergy and how you've made a proactive choice in order to avoid a migraine headache. You avoid a certain food. And this is, again, this whole idea of, you know, you've made a choice not to injure your body, which is so precious, of course. I mean, that's how we know you are, because you have a body. Certainly know you have a soul, because you promote and you teach and you learn about the seven Noahic commandments. But this idea of time-related awareness and accomplishing a lot in a little bit of time so it can have an effect on the immediate and long-distance future, your take on the ideas and how from within the axiomatic commandments of the seven Noahic commandments, it shouldn't be any contradiction that while there are six negative commands plus the commandment to make righteous legal systems, that good health should be right in sync within those seven. Good health and wellness should be right in sync with the idea of keeping the seven Noahic commandments.
Well, yeah, it's like Rabbi Hillel said in the book of if not now, when? And we don't know what's going to happen in our lives. You might get run over by a lorry tomorrow. So you really should be conscious of your time and try to achieve things. You know, don't put anything off. Do it now. The whole aspect of the health and wellness goes back to the Torah. It's taught that the Torah is to live by. And that really means, you know, taking care of yourself, being healthy, keeping your mind, being able to keep your mind sharp so you can do what you are supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Ron, I guess you maybe have the gist of what we're talking about. Would you like to contribute or you just want to listen? I don't want to force you to speak if it's uncomfortable for you.
I found something fascinating also by in the Rambam when he in Hilchot Talmud, the laws of Torah study, and where he said that persons should even decorate their homes well, so they should have a pleasant atmosphere to live in, and they should visit like museums and gardens where you feel a kind of a calm state, and you also, you know, protest against this injuring of the body in any way. The only thing is that when he mentioned that you appease the body in the time days of the festivals, where you buy the clothing you buy and the all the fest in light of all the festivities, and in the Hasidic thought it brings it out a little further, where it says that you're not so much appeasing the body, but you're including the body in these festivities. So we see here by these two systems where the body is not to be, physicality is not to be despised, but it should be included. And I found it interesting what Brad said earlier, that in Christianity, physicality, the body seems to be like more like an obstacle in spirituality. And when I encountered Judaism also, as Brad did, we see that there's a difference and that the body is here to work along. And actually, in certain instances, the body takes precedence in terms of if a certain, for instance, laws of kashrus, you're not allowed to consume pork. But if you need a certain enzyme that is, right now my mom is taking an enzyme that's a porcine enzyme, you're allowed to actually take it. And when I asked Rabbi Rogalski if this is okay, he says, Ron, 100% your health comes first. So we see a different approach from the Judaic way as opposed to the, Greek, Roman Christian influence.
Right. I'd like just to embellish that point. I think I've mentioned once during our 598 program presentations that during the 1973 Yom Kippur War, there was tremendous firefighting up in the north of Israel on the Syrian border, which eventually, you know, Israel had taken that area from the 67 and the 73 war. And a lot of Israeli soldiers were burned severely in the conflict. It was mamash, you know, like, you know, visions from hell, as I've heard it described in very poetic means. And because the soldiers had been burnt so badly, they would need skin grafts. And someone figured out, I don't remember who the source was, but this story was told by my father-in-law, who was an active participant in the 73 conflict, is that they actually flew in the stomach, I forgot which part of the stomach, of the pig, which has a striking similarity to the tone of human skin. So to this day, 42 and a half years later, you have a lot of Israelis walking around society with skin grafts from the burns they incurred during the war, because the pig skin, the inner lining of the stomach, I think it was, if I'm remembering, the inner lining of the pig stomach was suitable, and they brought in thousands and thousands of such stomach linings from, I think, Belgium. And it gave the Israelis who survived the war a certain quality of life. Otherwise, they would not be able to enjoy. So here we see the primacy of maintaining, even though legally you're not supposed to even be raising a pig, even under a secularized government in Israel. I think they have to be raised like in elevated cages. And even then, there's a whole thing over it. I don't want to get into, and I have to do some more research as well. But I'm just showing that the primacy of life is that even something which is so forbidden to us as Jewish people, if it is to save the life or to maintain a quality of life, it's permitted. Gentlemen, I'd like to go on to something which a Torah observant Jew experiences every morning, and I'm talking about someone like myself, is that we have three pronouncements that we make upon waking in the morning. One is an expression of faith, where we basically say the Moda Ani prayer, I offer thanks to you, living and eternal King, for you have mercifully restored my soul within me. Who's the me? Our physical body, your faithfulness is great. Then we have a morning blessing. We say, blessed are you, Lord, our God, King of the universe, who sanctifies us with commandments and command us concerning the washing of the hands. But the truth of the matter is we can't really go on to any more commandments until we wash our hands to relieve us of every type of spiritual purity. But as we learn later on in the code of Jewish law, a Jew cannot do many different types of commandments unless they've evacuated properly any bodily waste, whether it be in liquid form or solid form. I don't want to get more graphic than that. So here we're talking about already the restoration of the soul into the physical body and the proper maintenance of hygiene of the body. And then after that, we make a blessing after we've washed our hands. Blessed are you, Lord God, our King of the universe, who has formed men in wisdom and created with him numerous, and of course her as well. This is going on men and women. Women also make this blessing. And created with him numerous orifices and cavities. It is revealed and known before the throne of your glory that if one of them were to be blocked or one of them were to be opened, it would be impossible to exist even for a short while. So blessed are you, Lord, who heals all flesh and performs wonders. So Dennis, I'll turn to you. We see here that the beginning of a day, I think this is a universal type of consciousness, that first of all, we're thankful for being alive. We should take mindful of proper body hygiene and be acknowledging to the Creator that if there's any blockage, I mean, heaven forbid, an aneurysm, a stroke, anything like that, a heart attack, anything is blocked. The arteries are blocked. The veins are blocked. There's a need to do some sort of invasive procedure. But if we're not going through these things, how thankful we should be for the fact that we're not experiencing blockages in our body. Dennis?
Well, our bodies are not perfect, so we cannot expect them to work like clockwork every minute of the day. And when that happens, we have to be grateful for whatever we get. So there may be blockages, but we can overcome that. The blockages remind us that we are not living in a perfect world. There are interruptions, but we can overcome them. So what happens is we must be mindful of the fact that we must continue. So when we do have a problem, we don't stop everything. We just keep on going. I would like to refer back to the original thing of time that we started the program with. And to me, there is no difference of Christian time and Judaic time, because time is universal. And to think that different religions use time differently is a stretch of the imagination. But even if you have a bad time, you should be able to use your common sense to get over the bad things. So how many people have gotten over problems with serious diseases, with mental problems? We keep on going. And I like to read, the Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want. If you believe in God, you can overcome an awful amount of things.
Amen. Brad, your take on these matters.
I'm not really sure I've got, you know, much more to add there. I think it's compared to what Dennis just said. Because, you know, obviously I would agree with him. You know, definitely my original comment was not trying to make a statement on the time itself. More than, I think he's absolutely right. It's the usage of time. You know, I would like to say that I think that, you know, common sense, we all would like the idea that common sense, as my wife reminds me very often, that, you know, she'll do something. Like we were at somebody's Shabbos table for on Friday night, a rabbi here in Brooklyn, and you know, we're invited to his house, and my wife gets up and helps with the food, clearing the table and bringing more food. And she's a guest, you know? And, you know, I said to her, well, you know, that was amazing. Like, thank you for doing that. And you know, she said, well, oh, it's just common sense. Like, it's just what you do, you know? And I think that's easy to say. I think it's a lot harder to do, you know, and especially even in health, that's actually a really good example of, you know, the lack of common sense that we find. I think there's a famous example of, and it shows you as well, before giving an example, I'll say the reason I bring it out is, and I do think it is interesting, whether it's in relation to Christianity or not, I think that's irrelevant, but the view of how you look at the body once again, right? And how does that affect the way you view things? One really striking example that always stood out to me was you have you have a decent number of people, such that it is an actual statistic, who smoke or I've heard it particularly in the case of smoking, who have a situation in which they smoke to the point where they actually have to, God forbid, have to have like amputation, like limbs are amputated. It's some condition. And other than knowing, I can't remember the exact name of it. But to the point where, you know, doctors will obviously say to them, like, you have to stop smoking. And or you are literally every single minute you smoke, you're putting yourself in danger, and people will continue smoking just right up to the point where they're getting their leg amputated. And it is one of those things that you would like to say, wait a second, that's common sense. Even an animal wouldn't do that. I think that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. That's exactly, you know, I heard Rabbi Manus Friedman of Chabad, you know, make a comment about that. Like, what does that say when we would look at animals, and what is common sense for an animal? Even a human doesn't do it sometimes, right? And it's because of the fact, you know, the Rambam would say in Perek Chelek, is introduction to all the Agadita in the Masechta Sanhedrin, in the Talmud Sanhedrin, that, you know, he makes a comment that there's so many aspects that humans have that are in fact are not at all physical, purely physical. They are in fact a combination. They show our spiritual side to them. And I think, you know, it's interesting in health in particular, it's so evident in nowadays generation that in fact I would say common sense is missing Like, how does a person possibly pursue any habit to the point where it physically harms them? And it's clear that it physically harms them. And yet we do it every single day. And I'm not saying that I'm innocent of it either, you know, that I'm some pure, but I think it's a, you know, it's a fascinating example of, in fact, where our spiritual side, and by that I don't mean anything. I mean something, you know, very common sense. Like the Rambam says, you know, our spiritual side, part of our spiritual side, and Rashi says in Parshas Bereishis that part of our part of our makeup, spiritual side, is our ability to reason, our ability to understand. And that in and of itself has a spiritual component to it. And, you know, but it's fascinating that we can, on one hand, as humans, use all these chokhmas, all these, like, you know, little excuses for ourselves, somehow with health, to override our common sense and say, yeah, it's not that big of a deal. You know, I can continue smoking, you know, or I can continue drinking, or I can continue eating, you know, or even take it to the exact opposite extreme, right? Or I can continue exercising to the point where it's actually harming my body, because I've known people like that as well. You know, coming from the military, I've known some guys that were incredibly, and some women who were incredibly, incredibly extreme into, it's a complete opposite extreme. They were incredibly, extremely into exercise and everything to do with perfection of fitness and the physical body. And even that became unhealthy at points, to the point where doctors would have to say, you have to stop training. And, you know, I think it's a fascinating thing that it's you know, maybe in the days of Mashiach, we'll get to back to common sense. And but I think actually I would argue that common sense is one of those things that's missing. It's not ingrained in us. It's not just if it was completely natural, then all of us would be 100%, you know, or 90% even, phenomenal physical specimens. And it's just not true.
Don?
And it's
true. Yes, Alan.
No, it's me, Dennis.
Yes, Dennis, I'm sorry.
I'd like to elaborate on Brad's point there, and that is that most of us view our bodies as a sanctuary that we must take care of. But it all turns to nothing when we start picking on something very simple and we ingest too much sugar. By ingesting too much sugar, we are not doing a service to ourselves. We're doing an anti-service to ourselves, which hurts us, though our body is our being. So therefore, you can end up with all sorts of problems by enjoying the sweet stuff to the extent degree that you just keep ingesting sugar. And unfortunately, a lot of people in this world have gotten some form of diabetes. And yes, it can lead to losing of limbs, all sorts of nervous problems, etc. So the common sense is, if you've taken too much sugar, are you really helping yourself?
Alan, I'm sure you have what to say on these matters.
Well, eating right is very important. Unfortunately, in our society here, we have the corporations like Monsanto and ConAgra that deliver a good deal of the food. ConAgra even makes Hebrew National hot dogs. Can you believe that? these corporations, they're using genetically modified grains. Like they said, they're putting high fructose corn syrup in everything, ketchup, you name it. And, yeah, the sugar intake is really bad. One article recently that I read that I thought was interesting is the obesity problem that we're now going through really exploded about 20 years ago when, 20, 25 years ago, when the new dietary guidelines came out talking about, oh, you need to cut out fats. And that was really bad because you have to have a certain amount of fat in your diet to remain healthy. I mean, look at the brain. The brain is mostly fat. That's what all those nice little neurons firing are nestled in. And without eating the right kinds of fats, things like olive oil, you know, it doesn't do your body any good. So it seems like they keep coming up. But eating healthy, you know, you go to the grocery store and you look at the foods, and they're so full of additives and chemicals. So many of your things like food colorings are made from petroleum, you know, products, coal. It's really disgusting when you think about it. And, you know, I always wondered, you know, all these foods that are labeled organic, I don't understand why food has to be labeled organic. You know, that's just real food. 100 years ago, that's all there was. I think the foods that we have need to be labeled. If there's inorganic products in them, that's what needs to be foremost on the label. You know, this contains BHA. This contains whatever, you know, red number two food coloring. And so much of the food, you know, so much of the health problems that we have is because our diets are absolutely horrible. And even when you look at things, you know, you're talking about healthy foods. What's a healthy food? You know, you read all these things about, well, this is bad for you, that's bad for you. I've read that, you know, apples are bad for you because of the pesticides they put on them. Good grief, you know, they're talking about, you know, you have to be careful of water and things in the air. You know, if you read too much, you find out that just about everything in the world kills you. But there are certain things that will kill you a little quicker.
Yeah. Ron, if you're able to contribute, I'd welcome your thoughts on the matter.
Then I think I just have too much, so I'm going to try my best to keep it as simple as possible. And I agree with everything being said here. The thing is, one of the things Alan pointed out is why should food be labeled organic? And I came from a country where we didn't use, all food weren't produced. Everything was basically cooked from scratch every single day. So we didn't have any preservatives, additives, nothing basically. We were considered underdeveloped. Many times you come to me and you're like, wow, back home, how could we have done things so primitive? We didn't realize that primitive way of operating was actually the healthiest way. Here, everything is prepared, but they have to be preserved. So I try to shop exclusively at the Whole Foods stores, a Whole Foods store company, where a lot of things they don't let into their store to begin with. And many things that are labeled organic, I think it's easy for us to say, instead of looking for all the list of things that are not organic, let's grab something that's organic. I think one of the things we have been, we want is simplicity. And you like to go to the supermarket and just pick up things. Okay, it's labeled this, and you just put it into your bag without even having to read the ingredient list. And besides that, understanding what it actually says there. And in terms of eating healthy, I think the pleasure principle overrides common sense because I see it with myself. You know, I have a cup of coffee. I love to. I have whole milk. I know that I have some kind of light intolerance to dairy, but I still can't use the rice milk or the almond milk or the soy milk. I still rather the cow's milk. I know that my histamine will activate. So I said, you know what, I have a histamine block, I'll use it afterwards. But I'll still enjoy that cup of coffee with the whole milk. And in event of the histamine, I can always use a blocker. So you see, sometimes you're like too smart for your own good, and then the pleasure principle takes precedence, as opposed to what's actually good for you.
True. I want to go back to, thank you, gentlemen. I want to just pluck out a point that Brad brought up about over-exercising. I know there is a condition, maybe it has a more formal medical term, but I read about it, I think, in a sports magazine or a journal. There's the idea of an athlete's heart, where basically the athlete over-exercises because, you know, we're talking about high-level, you know, like world-class athletes, you know, like those who play in, like, the American sports and are compensated well for it, that they basically enlarge their heart from all their activity. And once they stop exercising, as they did as professional athletes for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it may be, that they can have heart problems. And a lot of what you would consider to be, you know, momish specimens of human fitness and vitality actually pass away at young ages. And so I recall a story about I forgot the name of the actor. He played Hercules in the 1950s in the movies, and he was a bodybuilder. And there was an article written about him, and I remember reading, I think it was in the Bergen Record when I was still living with my parents, so this was like the early 80s, about how what he did was to basically de-escalate his workouts, and basically he demoted himself to taking long walks on stretches of beaches on the California coastline. And by that, he was able to basically stay very healthy. I mean, he didn't look like Hercules anymore, but he was living way into his, I think he was 70 plus at that point, and he looked pretty good. So, you know, I want to mention that I'm watching a presentation by Dr. Mitchell Yass, who has something called the Yass Method of pain management, which is also something which is a very big issue here in the United States. People are dealing with a lot of pain. A lot of it's connected to being out of shape and being obese. And he mentioned something, again, harping on what Brad said, that there are people who are not exercising. There are people who are exercising the right exercise, but at the wrong time. And there are people who are exercising in a way that they actually will strengthen their muscular composition in order to reduce and, so to speak, put their pain into remission. And hopefully, as I learn more about that, hopefully we're going to bring this up as a discussion in future programs, even though we might not necessarily be dealing with the idea of health and wellness. Gentlemen, I'd like to turn now to plucking out of the Jewish code of law in a condensed fashion, which is applying to what we're talking about today, the protecting our bodies according to nature's rules. Very short halacha, very short law, but I think it has universal application. It applies to any person in the world. The body's health and complete state is important in the path of the service of God. For one cannot understand or know anything about the Creator while sick. Therefore, a person must stay away from things that will destroy the body and accustom himself to practices which strengthen and heal the body. As it says in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 15, guard yourselves very carefully. So, Dennis, I'd like to ask you, I take a certain joy out of this teaching, because if I'm staying away from something that is going to injure me, like, say, a terrible food or a terrible lifestyle choice, like smoking cigarettes, which is basically for most people becomes an unhealthy addiction and it drains their money, I think I should have a joyous state of mind that I'm engaging in this Torah instruction, this biblical injunction of guarding myself very carefully. Yes, I might slip here and there, but if I'm actively involved in doing things which are not going to actively destroy my body in the common understanding of active destroying, then I should have a positive outlook on my own personal life, not engaging in what I'm doing for a living or what's with it. We have to be happy and healthy and well individuals so we can spread that happiness and healthiness and wellness to other people. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Common sense was established a long time ago. A lot of it has been incorporated in Scripture, probably most of it. And the one thing that common sense screams out to everybody, but sometimes we don't listen, and that is we protect our mind so bad things don't get into it. We don't like bad ideas, so we protect ourselves. But in the same respect, how come we're not protecting our bodies from bad things entering into it or happening to our body? We seem to be overprotective of our mind, but common sense says you must protect your whole body. Your mind is only part of it. So why let your physical side suffer when you say you're protecting your mental side?
Thank you, Dennis. Brad?
Yeah, I very much what Dennis just said, I think is, you know, right on. And I think that halacha from the Rambam, you know, it's fascinating to even think that can be a law, right? That can be a halacha. It's interesting that to me, you know, you could view Torah from, let's say you approach it and you're fascinated in Kabbalah, right? And you know, you're somebody like, you know, like Madonna or something, and you get sucked into, you know, this particular approach of just sort of leaving everything else, but just sort of wanting to focus on the spiritual aspect of Torah. And, you know, it's interesting that the tradition says that you can't do that. It's not just physical, or sorry, it's not just spiritual, you know, mm-hmm. that it's a combination of everything. And the idea that, you know, it's once again, not the body is there to serve and help preserve your ability to stay in this world, to do good things, and do tshuva, and ultimately, you know, bring about the final rectification. I think it's fascinating when talking about all that we can do continually return to the question of eating, right? I mean, as Dennis brought out, that's the interesting thing, you know, it's why did it have to be that way? You know, I mean, you could have imagined a world like, you know, in the classic German philosopher, Heidegger, you know, posed the question of, is it better to exist than not exist? And it's supposed to be a philosophically paradoxical question. And the ultimate idea was, could you imagine it being otherwise? And I think this is one of those cases as well. You know, here you have the Jewish tradition for thousands of years saying, you know, there needs to be this balance, as Dennis is saying, this common sense balance of the spiritual and the physical. And, you know, it could have been completely otherwise, right? Maybe modern science would have discovered that is completely not true, right? I mean, you could hypothetically believe that maybe rather than being controversy in other parts of science, there would have been controversy, and we would have discovered that, in fact, every single bad thing you eat is better, you know, for you. You know, I mean, we could imagine some bizarre world. And yet, right, every single bit of our experience as humans has shown that it's like there's this vital connection between what you eat and sort of your quality of life, right? And it's you know, the thing, like the Rambam put it into law, you know, in the 1200s, like made it very clear that there is inherently this connection, and you can't ignore it. And I think it's really a fascinating thing of the entire sort of way of viewing the world. Like you know, even to be able to make a law about that says basically what Dennis is saying. It's like he's just setting what should be common sense, right? And he's reminding us that, like, don't get dragged down into this thought that what you put into your body doesn't matter, you know?
Mm-hmm. Alan, your take on these matters.
Well, back in the 1890s, there was an Englishman named Ebenezer Howard who wrote a book called Garden Cities of Tomorrow, and he proposed doing planning out a city where you had the residential part in the middle surrounded by what was essentially a park, a green belt. And outside of that, you would have the shops and stores, and outside of that, you would have the industry. And decades later, he was hailed as a visionary. But the funny thing is, this concept was first brought out in the Torah, at the end of Bamidbar, where you had the exact same thing. You had a green belt called a Migrash surrounding a town, and it was, you know, you were not supposed to have any kind of industry or farming going on there. It was just a natural setting, and it just seems, you know, here's something that was written so long ago that makes so much sense today, having a healthy atmosphere in the cities. Because, you know, you look at how so many of our cities are laid out. I don't know if you've ever been through Gary, Indiana, but I can't understand why anyone would want to live in a place like that. You know, there's no trees, no grass, nothing, just miles of factories and concrete. And that's not a healthy atmosphere for people to live in, certainly not for bringing up children. You know, thinking that forests and woods are something that's far away and, you know, not necessary to our health or well-being. And the Taurus says otherwise. So, you know, that, to me, that's just another sign of how not, you know, so many people say, oh, the Taurus is so old and, you know, you really can't go by it because, but, you know, there's so many ideas in there that are very modern. You know, we're just beginning to understand how healthy it is to be around a natural setting. And, you know, and they've shown, you know, people who take regular walks, like in the woods or in the park or something, are healthier both mentally and physically.
I like to attest to that, and I'm sure Brad can too, because Brad lives right next to Prospect Park, a wonderful park in the middle of the concrete jungle of Brooklyn. And I'm riding my bike through Prospect Park when I come home from work Monday through Thursday evenings. And it's basically I get recalibrated, you know, after a day of the logistics of dealing with, you know, severe mental illness with the people that I interact with. It's certainly refreshing just to ride through a park, not to deal with the normative traffic that you'll find in the evening in Brooklyn. Although it's not, you know, I can deal with it. That's why I can ride my bike through traffic in New York City or in Brooklyn in particular. But, you know, it's definitely a perfect place to get some respite before I go home. And if I have any, so to speak, emotional imbalance coming from working with, unfortunately, people who suffer tremendously, that riding my bike and doing circuit training, riding through the park, it's certainly, by the time I leave the park, which is basically I ride about a mile and 1.2 miles until I exit the park, it certainly recharges my battery for the rest of the night's activities and preparing myself to go to sleep at night. Ron, I know that you are definitely involved in physical fitness activity and also you work extremely hard making the balance and making those right choices. What can you encourage our blessed listening audience to take heed to?
I was listening to Dennis, Brad, and Cecil. I was overlooking the secretion of endorphins, and that is what knocks common sense right out the window. And it's a balance that I can't quite say that I've maintained. Because whatever we do, we feel as high. What happens is that once we have a secretion of the endorphins, level rises, it gives us such a feeling, a euphoric feeling, that we indulge in it and overindulge. I myself have overexercised because I've basically disproportioned my body because of the type of exercises I did. And only now I'm trying to bring myself back to a balanced state. But what I realized was that I was addicted to exercising. It made me feel really good, not only about myself physically, but whatever negative ideas or negativity that came my way, it was neutralized through exercising. Unfortunately, people find this through food, drinking, certain activities which are unhealthy. The problem is that when we realize that we have something to the problem is when we use this to balance our lives, we create a greater imbalance because the harm we don't even consider any longer because we're feeling so good at the time. And I think it's what we have to do is, one, we need education. We need to understand what we're doing. And then common sense actually kicks into gear. Other than that, it's right out the window. So my thing is always to acquire an understanding, educate yourself in whatever it is that you do, because in that way you're able to bring about some sort of balance.
Beautiful. You know, I'm thinking also, gentlemen, as we're talking about this idea, you know, the trials and tribulations of eating, perhaps it goes back to the original sin, which involved eating. And perhaps this is something which plays in our subconscious, something, or our superconsciousness, or you know, and that since then, this is a teaching from the Babacher Rebbe and people that came before him, even after, that since the eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, so we have an ambivalence towards the wrong behavior, but at the same time, too, sometimes we can extract something good out of the bad behavior, which I'll illuminate in a moment from reading from the Code of Jewish Law, and that this is part of the problem, that, you know, there was, I mean, it's just something we have to accept if we follow the biblical narrative, that the first mishap in terms of behavior, in terms of intellectual miscalculation, was through the sin of the eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So everything's a little bit confused. That we can sort of untangle ourselves from the confusion is to our benefit. And however, when we get to the point of realizing that there is a problem, then we're more likely to take action. Now, before I go on further, I just want to mention that there was a great person in the field of psychology who passed on around 2 years ago. His name was Dr. Reuven Feuerstein. He was an Israeli clinical developmental and cognitive psychologist known for his theory of intelligence, which said, who he affirmed way before the neuroplasticity movement, which I'm very much in favor of, that intelligence is not fixed but rather modifiable. And one of the quotes I want to extract out from him, that he talks about working with, say, like adolescents who are in crisis, that intervention even in adolescence is not too late. So I would say that our intervening or advocating that people reconsider, as we're talking about healthy lifestyles and wellness, meaning the quality of health, it's never too late to intervene to make changes in our life. And that one being said, I'd like to go back to the Code of Jewish Law and then quote how sometimes eating something bad can actually be something better than eating something healthy, because there has to be a balance in everything. Now, in Law 3, in Chapter 32, in the laws of protecting our bodies according to nature's rules, therefore a person who desires to protect his or her physical health should only eat an average amount according to the nature of his or her body. Not too little, not enough to satisfy his full appetite. Most diseases come to a person either because he or she eats the wrong foods or because he or she stuffs themselves overeating even though he or she eats good foods. This was implied by King Solomon in his wisdom, who stated in the book of Proverbs, chapter 1, verse 23, quote, "One who guards his mouth and his tongue guards himself from trouble," end of quote. This refers to a person who guards his mouth from eating the wrong foods and from overeating, and his tongue from speaking about things other than his needs. The wise man, and here the wise man is referring to Aristotle, said that eating a small quantity of unhealthy foods does not harm one as much as eating too much of healthy foods. Now, again, that's the point I wanted to bring out. So we can cheat a little bit, but at the same time, too, if we don't cheat at all, we shouldn't think that we're doing the right thing by overeating that which is healthy for us. Dennis?
Rambam said everything in moderation. If you don't know what moderation is, then you're a glutton. If you're a glutton, there are no limits to how much pleasure and senses you want to absorb. We must be mindful that we have to control our lives. Just as we control our mind that we don't go insane, we must control our body that we don't force deterioration unnecessarily. So therefore, the term moderation has very distinct meaning, but it's very hard to define, because when you get into a gray area, we start rationalizing. But still in all, common sense and moderation go hand in hand together, and we have the ability to police ourselves or control ourselves. If you give up that control, then suffer the consequences.
Thank you, Dennis. Brad?
Yeah, I don't think I could say it better than Dennis. That was exactly what came to my mind, was the Rambam Halacha on finding the middle path. Honestly, that sums it up, right? Sums up so much of what we're talking about. That there's, you know, once again, there's neither excess nor lacking too much. You know, there's a fine line there. And the truth of the matter is, you know, as Dennis said, it's not uniquely something that is from the Torah. You know, there was many of the Greek philosophers that found it logical or in other words, didn't need divine revelation, were continuing on the traditions of earlier generations of that exact same thing, of, you know, finding the middle path. And, yeah, I think Dennis summed it up really well.
Alan?
You know, you look at our society in the last 20 years, we've supersized our portions. You go out to the restaurant, you have to eat,
yes,
and everything you're served is like three times the amount of what it was 40 years ago. And this is a part of it. It's a cultural problem that we have, that we just eat too much. Like you said, even good food, where you're eating way too much of it. You know, when you go to a fine restaurant, you know, a lot of people, first time they go to a nice restaurant, they think they're being served these little portions. They're actually average portions. You know, your protein intake, say for a fish, all the protein you need, a grown man needs for his entire day, would be a piece of fish about the size of a deck of cards. That's it. That's all you need as far as your protein requirement. And yet you go to a restaurant and you're served, you know, like half a salmon, or, you know, this huge steak. Even though you think, well, this is healthy, you know, it's good for me, B vitamins and all that. But it's like you were saying, you're eating too much of even something that's supposed to be healthy for you. And this is a problem that I don't see as being addressed, because, you know, they make more money. The more people eat, the more money these companies, corporations, restaurants make, and they just shove these huge amounts of food in your face. Well, you know, you remember even things like soft drinks back when you were a kid. You know, a large soda is basically what a small soda is today.
If I recall correctly, I remember in the 1950s, you could only get a 7-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola. I mean, today, that's what people probably could sweep down with one. They increased the size to like 16 and then 32, and they have two liters now, or a half a gallon of soda. Maybe they have a gallon of soda today. I don't know. I mean, there was a whole furor a couple of years ago when Mayor Bloomberg, when he was mayor of New York, was actually trying to make illegal the serving of, 32-ounce cups or 60-ounce cups of soda. I mean, you can't really – I mean, it didn't pass, if I remember, but certainly he was – you know, you could – the uproar of people, there were commercials being made. I guess people paid by the soft drink industry. Who is the mayor to tell me I can't drink my 60-ounce cup or my 32-ounce diet soda when I go to a movie? I have the freedom. Yeah, well, they have the freedom to get diabetes, and of course, the garbage they put in diet soda, they have the freedom also to get sick from that stuff. Ron, is that freedom?
Don, the problem why the city, I think a lot of people went against him, is because after the city got stuck with a medical bill, then they came up with these ideas. So it wasn't so much they care about our intake and our well-being, but once they get stuck with the bill, then they start taking action. One of the things I've noticed, though, I mean, from South America, my grandmother, in her early 20s, she was diagnosed with a condition called neuralgia. It was kind of some kind of facial pain coming from some kind of nervous tension. Don, you know what the doctor recommended that she do to alleviate that pain? Smoke. My grandmother started smoking in her 20s, and that would alleviate the pain, the facial pain that she had. It would relax the muscles in her face. Now, the cigarettes that she smoked for about 50 years. She immigrated to Canada, and she stopped suddenly because she didn't have this pain any longer. She was addicted to the tobacco because that was all it was in the cigarettes. She didn't have all the additives of the American cigarettes in her system. Many things we don't really even sometimes understand, they are designed to addict us so the profits can keep coming. They are food enhancers that does not supply taste to the food. It actually adheres to certain receptors in our minds. And that's why when we start eating, we can't stop. And as soon as we get the feeling of any kind of hunger in our minds, immediately our
mindset is grab bag because this is good. And it's not because it tastes good so much, but because we're being duped on a level which we don't even understand. And these are the enhancers that they use because they're chemical enhancers. They have nothing to do with the taste of the food. So a lot of times our whole dietary system is all screwed up because it's happening on a chemical state as opposed to just a physical state of eating. Because you always look at a person who's overweight and they're eating and eating and you're on it. Why can't you stop? What's wrong with you? You don't realize what's wrong with them is on a chemical level, which they themselves can't understand why.
Ron, I'm thinking, harping back to Dr. Feuerstein, may he rest in peace, that he mentioned that the mind influences our behavior, but our behavior influences the mind. And so I guess once we get into that insidious cycle of ingesting foods that create those chemical reactions, we're going to be hardwiring our brain to react in such a way that we want to reach for those foods. But, Alan, I'd like to turn to you for a moment. The idea of using deceptive means of, so to speak, generating food addictions, could you see this potentially in the future being a matter which is addressed by the Sevenoy Commandments in terms of dinim judgments? Because, I mean, it's basically selling a person a bill of goods, which is not what it's advertised to be one thing, but it's actually causing a deleterious effect of creating a damaging food addiction, which also not only harms the person, but also causes damage to society because it causes extra health costs to be incurred by society at a whole, on a general scale.
Well, one of the seven Noahide laws is that of eating the limb of the living. And, you know, one of the seven laws has to do with eating, what kind of food you can or cannot take. And this law, from what I've studied, expands into a lot of different areas, environmental areas, and probably, like what you're saying, talking about the additives and everything. You know, eating the limb of a living animal is spiritually damaging, but again, eating the wrong kind of foods that are harmful to the body also is damaging to your health, which does affect your spirituality as well. So, yeah, it is absolutely something that would fall within the paradigm of the seven Noahide laws.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, at this point, we're going to conclude today's program. I'd like to go around the board again to get your viewpoints, and I want to thank all of you, Dennis Ryan, Brad Arner, Alan W. Cecil, Ron Williams, for using one of your most valuable of resources, your precious time, to come on and dialogue with myself and the people who are listening to the program around the world. And hopefully we haven't covered every issue, but again, the whole idea is hopefully I believe we've used this time wisely to get other people to consider. You know, yesterday I was sitting in my local congregation called the Frankel Shul here in Crown Heights, talking to my son about the idea of spreading an idea, spreading a concept. And I mentioned to him, you know, how when we went to Israel almost 6 years ago, he didn't know about soccer. I mean, he might have saw a soccer ball, he might have seen people playing, but he never played until he was 10 years old. And then one day when we were in a certain place called Modin Elite, which is the place of the Maccabees from historical times, the story of Hanukkah, he was invited to play by one of my wife's cousin's children, and he began to love to play it. And he came back to America, and he started talking, I want to play more soccer. We got him a soccer ball, we got a soccer ball net. He got his friends to play. So this is in the spirit that I was explaining to him, and I'm just sharing my viewpoint, is if we bring this out here on cyberspace and here on Blog Talk Radio, and for people can hear the podcast version of this program, to talk about it. This is more important than who's in first place in the National League or the American League, because this is going to affect ourselves on a more personal level and in societal level than talking about who's leading the American League or National League in home runs. Okay, people want to talk about it, gesundheit ahead, as we say in Yiddish. Go ahead. But make some time to talk about health issues. And I know where I'm involved in a social service organization, almost every week when we have community meetings for the people that we service, we try to bring up a health issue with the hope and prayer that someone's going to take a molecule of the advice or information shared with them and integrate it into their lives, see how they can be successful making a change in their health patterns and their healthy behaviors, and their wellness gets upticked, that they bring back to another meeting to talk about to encourage other people to get involved in these type of matters. Dennis, I'll let you make your concluding statement now.
I have two quick things to say. First of all, Alan mentioned a town in Indiana. I bet every house and apartment in Indiana has pictures of beautiful landscapes within their living. The other thing is, common sense says that you cannot heal and cure effects without changing the cause. If you don't go after the cause, you are chasing the effect. So if you want to solve or resolve problems, you must address the cause and not chase after the effect. Thank you.
Okay. Brad?
Yeah, I would sum up with a final little tidbit that I heard from a breath lover rabbi on the topic of emuna, and as it related to diet, just general healthy eating. And the Rambam has a statement, I don't know whether it's in the Mishnah Torah or elsewhere, but basically says, you know, every single thing on this planet was created for our needs, right? Which Rashi explicitly says in when talking about the flood with Noah, the Mabul, that everything was wiped out. And why was it wiped out? Because it was no longer needed by man, right? And so then it was replanted when after everything dried up. But that every single thing on this planet has some utility, whether that is a certain way to architect cities, the need to see green, the what we eat, how much we eat, or the proper use of tobacco, or the proper use of hemp or marijuana, for example, right? The Rambam explicitly says everything has its use. It's just, you know, maybe it's all about finding the right balance there. And sometimes that takes a little bit more, you know, thought, a little bit more in investigation into exactly what its best use is. But, you know, as Alan was bringing out as well, we have to remember, everything becomes more complicated when we start involving corruption and money and profit motives. And, you know, it's a total package that we sort of have to all work on together and to really, you know, bring the total level of humanity up, both in eating, both in profit, both in everything. All right.
Thank you, Brad. Alan?
You just need to look at, concentrate a little bit more on about what you're eating instead of grabbing the bag of Cheetos, try to get some fruit. You know, it's like Ram was saying about getting addicted, you know, the chemicals in your brain. That's absolutely true. And there's some things like sugar that are just extremely addictive. And it's a very hard thing to kick. And, you know, if you eat processed food, I mean, this is what your body makes cells out of. This is the old saying, you are what you eat, is very true. Mm-hmm. And if you're eating processed food, you're going to have a processed body.
I like that. Ron?
Eating to live as opposed to living to eat should not just remain a slogan, but it should become an active in the way in which we approach not only eating, but life itself.
Thank you, Ron. Okay, gentlemen, again, I want to thank you all, and I bless that hopefully we will convene. We won't be able to convene in 2 weeks because it will be right after the end, the conclusion of the Passover holiday. I'd just like to throw it out for you, your intellectual perusal, that hopefully we can get together in 3 weeks. Hopefully we can do that. And I'm not asking for yes or no live on the air, but I'll contact all of you individually to see. Hopefully we can reconvene in about 3 weeks. With that being said, we're going to conclude with today's program with, of course, our segue-ending musical artist by the name of David Doma. I hope he goes back home to help us realize and internalize our Tzelem Elohim is no dream, our divine image, hopeful skill in scrimmage. And the name of this song is That's Life, and this discussion is a part of That's Life. And may we see the development of that life or our lives and everyone's lives, all the 7 billion plus people here living on this blessed earth, the human family experience. Kol Mishpacha Adama, proceed in the way of Ahav Echad, one love, Gur Echad, one destiny, Kulanu, Bedarchin Om Darchi Shalom, in a pleasant and peaceful way. And I just want to remind you, and I won't let you forget, because I'm going to try never to forget, we've got to do good. And the reason why we can do good is because Tevet Tov Lehetiv, it's the nature of the good to do good, and the Creator is the source of all goodness. And if we're on the earth, that means there must be something good about us. So let's increase in that goodness that the Creator was the nature, source of all goodness, gave to us to do. In the meantime, here's music by my fellow brother Jew. That's Life by David Dom. Let's take it home. Take care, everyone.
So long.